Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Warning. This narration contains scenes and scenarios that may be disturbing to some viewers. Viewer discretion is advised. Now, let's delve into the dark together. Agony Blue had the unique displeasure of never being believed. Maybe it stemmed from the lie the doctors first promised her mother. Where the doctors had predicted an easy birth, Agony had taken 20 long physical hours to labor her way out of her exhausted, furious mother. It had been a bloody birth, with the little metal wands that kept track of her heart condition and her pulse beeping every 30 seconds. The cardiac crash carts had been tentatively placed in the corner of the room, waiting just in case Agony's mother's heart gave out. Or maybe it was the 20 seconds that followed the final push. Absolute silence had preceded her birth. The silence so profound and absolute that the doctor felt no choice but to pronounce her dead. Her mother, the tracks on her arm still leaking blood from yesterday's needle, breathed a sigh of relief at the thought of her matriarchal responsibilities being disposed of so easily, like a carnival goldfish. The resident nurse, still bloody and sweaty from the difficult birth, didn't believe the doctor's quick diagnosis, and she leaned in for a second look. And to her absolute dismay, she felt the quiet fluttering of a pulse.
She's alive,
the nurse cried, throwing the room into absolute chaos. Those words choked and sputtered, needed to be unhinged from the back of her throat and spit out, as each syllable had little hooks that stuck into the back of her spongy throat.
No,
her mother exclaimed, her bony chest heaving.
That little shit isn't even crying.
It was true. 3 minutes in, and Agony had yet to make a single peep. The doctor frowned, blood running in rivulets down his crumpled hospital scrubs. Sweat was starting to stain his collar the faintest shade of piss yellow, and his dark black hair was plastered in ringlets against his neck. "Let me see her," he frowned, and reached his hands out. It was completely unprecedented that in his practice he would come across something like this. He was a good Christian man who did good Christian things in the St. Baptist of the Holy Methodist Hospital, where the corridors were tiled in a cracked eggshell blue color, running like a river from room to room. Or, at least, it used to be. Large cracks now ran through the tiles like rivulets in an empty quarry, draining the blue hue away. The weary doctor frowned and reached his arms out. Little Agony hardly weighed more than a feather, and her limbs hung limply from her shirt sleeves like a corpse dredged from a basin.
Well, I'll be damned.
Her pulse fluttered quickly, roughly, adamantly, and silently.
I'll be goddamned. No, wait.
Agony's mother cried out.
It can't be.
But nobody was listening. All their attention was turned to little Agony, whose steady heartbeat was defying all of the odds.
It can't be.
She yelled again.
Stop saving her.
She screamed, her arms and legs strapped down, as the doctors and nurses whisked away Agony into the ICU unit down the hall. Everything was moving too quickly. Her life was starting to overflow. It was regurgitating everything she had flushed away over the past 10 years of her life, and it was bringing up the shit and the clogged bits of hair and broken fingernails and all the little carnival goldfish she had thoughtlessly thrown away. Everything was starting to come back up, And in that moment, Agony's mother started to drown. Agony's mother never quite forgave her for the lie of her birth. Or perhaps it all stemmed from Agony's kindergarten confession. Agony's first day of kindergarten outfit consisted of a bright blue pair of stretchy fabric tights, layered by a faded red tank top dress and a lacy cardigan that was clearly two sizes too big for her. It was clear to anyone that Agony had picked out the outfit herself, but it would have been significantly less clear that Agony was forced to select the first day of kindergarten outfit for herself, as her mother, high from heroin, was passed out in the tub in the bathroom they shared. It would have also been significantly unclear to the ordinary observer at how completely unusual it was for Agony to be at her teacher's knees, gently nudging her teacher's elbow only 20 minutes into her first day of kindergarten. For the ordinary observer, that would have seemed normal, quaint, almost. "Look at how normal this little girl is," they would have said, gently smiling. "Look at how average, how conventional." But Agony was anything but. In all of her oddness and differentness, Agony had spent the most formative years of her life completely and utterly silent. From 0 to 4, Agony had been completely and terribly silent. Not a cry, not a sigh, not a single word. Not that it would have mattered much anyway. Her absentee mother, the rotating door of boyfriends, drugs openly lying around the apartment. Even if she would have spoken, who would have listened? And so, Agony spent the majority of her time silent, out of the way, and hidden. In fact, Agony spent the majority of her time in the kitchen, in the big bay window that looked out over her neighbor's garden. And so it was highly unusual that Agony spent the first 20 minutes of the first day of kindergarten at the teacher's knees, reaching up with her little hands to whisper into her teacher's ear. As soon as little Agony left, Teacher 2 dragged over Teacher 1.
"What did she say?"
Teacher number 2 whispered to the first, her eyes darting back and forth as her fingers rubbed together with an insistent, frantic energy. It had been 20 minutes since her last smoke, and she was just barely fighting off the urges for another. She was on her last straw with the PTA and the superintendent after getting caught smoking in the little girl's room by a little girl. That mother had called the principal the very instant the little girl had told, and if the mother was anything like the little girl, Teacher number 2 could imagine the mother's voice as shrill and whiny. Teacher number 1 hesitated, the rough edges of her face wobbling a bit as she desperately tried to take in whatever Agony just told her. Her lips were quivering, like there was twine attached at each end pulling tight, and the cracked lip liner was bleeding into her skin. Her eyes darted around the classroom, accounting for each set of young, impressionable ears.
Menards' Black Friday sale is here! Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious to buy chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Just before she, too, whispered into Teacher number 2's ears. Something had scared Teacher number 1. It wasn't the fact that Agony was finally talking, which was something they were all, frankly, relieved about, but rather, it was what she said.
"She's...
well..." Teacher number 1 had difficulty forming her words.
"Little Agony's got a secret friend."
Teacher number 2 frowned.
"You mean, like, imaginary?"
Judging from the horror stories Teacher number 2 had heard about Agony's mother and her home life, she had imagined far worse being whispered from Agony's lips.
"Well, that's not highly unusual. Fairly common for that age group, in fact. Little Timothy has an invisible friend, too. He told me so last week."
"Yes, well..."
"And little Agatha." She claims she's got a large elephant walking around after her. A big one. Teacher number two's words were running like a faucet, loose and frantic. It claims she's walking around with her right now. That's not a pink elephant right now. Teacher number one leaned over and shut off the tap by grabbing teacher number two's arm roughly. That's not it. The pressure against the dam was building. Even with all the words teacher number two threw against the sandbags, there was nothing in the world that could hold back what Agony had whispered not 2 minutes ago into teacher number one's ears. Teacher number one hesitated as the twine pulled her lips taut across. She paused. That wasn't all that she said. Teacher number one leaned in even further, her lips brushing against teacher number two's skin. In any other situation, the conspiratorial whisper could have looked sensual, romantic even. But the shaking in teacher number one's hands belied all sense of sexual energy. Agony's invisible friend showed up last night, she said. Teacher number one whispered. He's tall and dark and watched her for a while underneath the lamppost down the street. She didn't mind, though, she said. Teacher number one swallowed hard, picturing what she was about to say next. She doesn't mind, because he's the only person she's ever met that's got a face that matches how she feels inside. Teacher number two swallowed hard and took a step back, reeling from the words like they were tentacles thrashing for teacher number one's face and threatening to drag her down farther into the abyss. The color drained from teacher number two's face as she realized the implication of little Agony's words. Watching, she said slowly, picturing where Agony lived. She had accidentally ended up in that area once, after the GPS took them off track from the nice seafood place they had made reservations for the night before. Under the lamppost, she swallowed hard again. His face. She's gotta be making that up, Teacher Two whispered. She's just gotta. There's no way that's real, right? But Teacher Number One didn't answer right away. Instead, watching as little Agony watched them from the bright blue beanbag in the corner. As their eyes met, little Agony smiled for the first time in her 5 years of life. And teacher number one swallowed hard, too, finding herself suddenly unwilling or unable to look away as little Agony Blue's eyes suddenly lifted to the ceiling of the far right corner of the room and watched, as if something was pulling itself across. The first significant time Agony was not believed, other than the tragic event of her successful birthday, occurred several weeks after her first day of kindergarten. It was a Saturday morning. At this time, Saturday morning, Agony would have been usually found hiding in one of the several broken kitchen cabinets. It was a habit that she had cultivated from ever since she gained the gift of movement, and from the second that she could register the blank, high eyes of her mother and her cadaverous movements, and the way her head was rolled onto the back of her neck. Agony had several favorite spots, and she had a bit of bringing her favorite blankets and toys into them and nesting. It had gotten a tad more difficult now that she had gained in both stature and weight, and she was finding that her favorite kitchen cabinets were slowly turning back into the empty wrappers and the used needles that filled them inside. Still, when her mother got particularly bad, Agony found a way to squeeze into her favorite spots. So that's probably why her mother was so surprised after stumbling through her stupor after a particularly rough night, tripping over a case of empty beer cans, accidentally slicing her toe on an exposed corner, that there Agony stood, with her back to the entrance to the rotting kitchen. The room was quiet. A cold thread of wind eased in from the broken latch. The big bay window that Agony was so fond of was broken, and it couldn't be closed all the way. Her mother had meant to have it fixed years ago, but that was before the heroin had tightened its noose, leaving blue-black bruises all up and down her neck and back and in the crook of her arms. Her mother was used to Agony's dumb silence and her oddness, but this was different. The room felt cold and alien, and in the harsh daylight, Agony's mother could finally see the beer cans and pizza boxes stacked ceiling high in the corner, and the cockroaches crawling underneath.
Mama?
Agony turned, her face a ruddy, squished mess. Her face was tangled in dreadlocks around her thick face, the tears leaking disgustingly off the creases of her chin. In the harsh daylight, Agony's mother could also finally see the dirt and pizza crumbs caked into Agony's clothes and hair. The harsh daylight hurt her eyes too much. She wanted to get high instead. "Go back to your room, Agony," Agony's mother grunted.
"But, Mama..."
"Go the fuck back to sleep. What are you even doing up this early?" Her hands fumbled through the broken kitchen cabinets. The needles weren't where they were supposed to be. "Go back to your room."
"But, Mama..."
"Agony." She whirled around, the lights and the sounds bleeding together in a piercing whistle, like that of an oncoming train. It burned through her consciousness, washing out everything in a sterile white and forcing everything into a sharp relief. On particularly rough days like this one, she could still feel where the calluses of her toes used to be, like a phantom limb. She could still remember the pain, too, the effect that it took to develop them. The phantom calluses still ached, but not nearly as bad as the heroin tracks that replaced them. Like a bad wrist on a rainy day, her broken dreams would ache alongside the calluses of her toes during the particularly nasty withdrawals.
"Go to your room." "But, Mama..."
Agony whispered.
"That's where the man is."
Her bottom lip quivered obscenely. "Ah," her mother thought to herself. "Here we go again."
"What man, Agony?" "The man who comes to my window at night,"
she whimpered, her eyes pleading and begging.
"He's been whispering to me again, and telling me things."
"Agony, there's no way that's possible."
"Mama, I'm telling you the truth. At first I liked him, because I thought he was my friend, because of the flowers he brought me, but then he got mad."
She leaned in, her breath hot on her mother's sunken cheeks.
"But he didn't like that I told on him to my teachers, that he wanted to be my little secret."
"Agony, come on.
I'm serious."
Her lips quivered, her big brown eyes glinting like a rat's in the dying light. Every time Agony's mother looked into those almond-slanted eyes, the train whistle in her head shrilled a little louder.
"I thought he'd get mad, but he didn't. He just smiled really big. His lips almost touched his ears."
She shivered.
"It says he's gonna take me away."
"Agony, take you where?" Agony's mother suddenly felt very tired. The itching had moved up from her fingertips, and it was burrowing up past her knuckles. She could feel it coming. The urge. It was going to dig itself into her veins and spread outwards if she didn't do something about it now.
"I asked,"
Agony whispered, her nose running and dripping onto her dirty white frock.
"But all he did was smile."
"Yeah, well..." Her mother's fingers scrambled like rats in the broken kitchen drawers, her fingers finally finding purchase against an unused needle.
"Maybe going away won't necessarily be a bad thing."
The second significant time Agony Blue wasn't believed came in the dead of night on a Tuesday. It was 3 weeks after her fifth birthday, and her mother's latest boyfriend was over. This one was lucky against the valiant struggle against his meth addiction. He still had all of his teeth, and his hair was only falling out in dime-sized patches instead of sheets. He was also lucky in that Agony's mother had decided to keep him around even after his dealer was cold-clocked and shot 6 times in some back alley in Newark. It was a rough couple of days for the new couple, but Jake pulled through by finding a new guy right away. A better guy, too, he promised, with stronger stuff. Agony's mother had smiled, and Jake didn't even mind the rotting teeth. He didn't mind the rotting teeth and the wasted limbs and the fact that she made fun of him in her rasping, meth-trottled whispers when he couldn't get hard in bed for more than 20 minutes, because Agony's mother had something that all the other meth-wasted junkie women Jake had shacked up with didn't. The hallway was even worse than the kitchen. Jake had to watch his step, and there were exposed beams sticking straight through the cheap, worn linoleum. He had tripped a couple of times, cursing himself as he accidentally pulled down an entire sheath of rotting wallpaper. The cobwebs that hung in thick curtains across the dilapidated hallway shook slightly every time the 7 o'clock train came pounding through, and dust would fall in thick clumps, piling up like a dirty snowdrift underneath. Jake wasn't sure how she would react if she were to catch him in the act like this. Although he mused to himself as he crept down the decrepitated hallway to a white wooden door, she probably wouldn't even care. Agony's soft little breaths, each as tiny and quick as a hummingbird, filled her entire bedroom. She was curled up in the far corner of a pale mattress that Agony's mother had dredged from the nearby Applebee's dumpster. Jake remembered thinking at the time how odd it was pulling mattresses from an Applebee's dumpster, of all places, the first time he had walked into Agony's bedroom and inquired about the stack of mattresses, Princess and the Pea style. Agony's mother had gone on to explain that Applebee's, per se, wasn't handing out mattresses, and other bedroom accessories had side options to their Happy Meals, but rather it was the luxury hotel across the street that had recently upgraded, regulating their current stock of towels, bed covers, and mattresses to the trash. Agony's mother had eventually pulled some of the towels out, too. The luxury hotel's logo was emblazoned and weaved into the little nest Agony had built for herself next to her bedroom, carving a hole out of all the trash that Agony's mother had dumped into her room as well. Calling this dump a bedroom was a bit of a stretch, even by Jake's perverted imagination. As Jake entered the doorway, he suddenly felt the slightest tug of apprehension in his chest. He frowned. This is the first time this has happened. Maybe it was the oppressive darkness, filling Agony's bedroom like a gas and defying the weak, but albeit there, light emanating from the bare light bulb hanging in the hallway. Maybe it was the line of stuffed animals Agony had placed across her doorway, like soldiers lining up against some unimaginable evil. Or maybe, Jake mused to himself, it's the windows. They were like open sores against the grayed flesh of her decaying bedroom walls. The blinds Agony's mother had screwed in, her solitary act of motherhood of 2015, after Agony complained of the bright city lights had somehow fallen, leaving the windows open and gaping. Jake felt an involuntary shiver crawl up his spine, like a cockroach, as he suddenly felt a sensation of eyes watching him. The blinds were nowhere to be seen. Jake frowned uneasily. They were heavy, solid things. There's no way Agony could have moved it alone with her little arms. Maybe Agony's mother moved them. But even with the blinds missing, and the unnatural darkness, and the stuffed animals, Jake couldn't wait for long. He crossed over the doorway, his footsteps crunching as he stepped on wilted, week-old potato chips littering her floor, and crossed over to her bed. For the itch was starting to spread. It lived away in his brain, chittering and irritating him like sand underneath the rhinoceros's skin. And occasionally, just occasionally, it would break out. Moving its way down his spine like a cockroach crawling down a drainpipe, it would worm its way underneath his skin, moving into his veins, stretching its way towards his fingers. Sometimes it stopped there, but sometimes it also kept going. "Agony," Jake whispered. He was standing next to her bed. She didn't wake up. Good.
He had a wilted plastic flower in his hand. His work would occasionally hand those out to give to your loved ones, and he reached out to place the flower into the wildflower bouquet already sitting on the plastic TV stand next to her bed. The beauty of the flowers was held in stark relief against the chipped TV stand. But he frowned. When did those get there?
He doesn't like that.
Jake whipped back around, his fingertips jumping from the dirty plastic cup like it was on fire. Agony was awake and sitting up in the bed.
That's why he's doing that. He didn't like that you're in here.
She had been dead asleep a second ago. His heart had practically jumped straight out of his chest at her sudden outburst, and he balled up the threadbare covers in his fist in an effort to slow down his racing heart.
Doing what, Agony?
Her eyes were wide open, and in their glittering reflection, Jake could see his own dumbfounded expression look back. Agony was a difficult one to wake. It was one of the issues that Agony and her mother ran into in the morning, trying to get her ready for school. It was part of her condition, and when her mom was finally able to drag her from her bed, Agony would be in some befuddled, crotchety, zombie state for the next hour. It had been this way since she was just a baby. It was just how it had always been. Except now. Maybe it was the baby's hairs that were rising on their own accord on the back of his neck. Or maybe it was the sensation of eyes watching him. A feeling that hadn't quite gone away since he first crossed the threshold and stepped into the blackness that enveloped her room. Or maybe the darkness. That's what was setting Jake's alarm bells off. Jake could see the apartment lights next door. The apartment buildings were so close that he could practically see the couple across the street fighting, the husband grabbing a chair and the wife sobbing, curled up in the corner. Their lights were all flipped on, the light racing across the alleyway, blazing against the hard-packed brick, across the alleyway and up the 8 stories of graying, crumbling brick, and then... nothing. The light seemed to stop before it could hit Agony's bedroom window. Like there's somebody outside. Somebody watching. It was too dark for Jake to see. Agony. His voice was like velvet wrapped around a butcher's knife. His hand reached out like a snake and curled around Agony's face. His fingers grasped her chin, leaving blue-black bruises behind. He'd had a similar hand grab his chin like that, only it was years ago. He'd tried for years to put it out of his mind with drugs and late-night women, and there were times that he thought that he'd finally nicked them. But the thing is that these memories flowed like gasoline, simply waiting for the spark to blow everything up.
Agony, I'm going to ask you one more time. Doing what, Agony?
His peppermint breath was hot against her cheek.
What do you see, Agony?
His eyes glittered in the dark.
He's smiling.
Suddenly, the window smashed in and cracked against the back of Jake's head. Pain exploded behind Jake's eyes, and he grabbed the back of his head, keening in agony. The jagged edge had sliced an enormous gash running from the top of Jake's left ear to the top of his right shoulder. Blood sprayed from the wound, turning the window and walls a dark red.
What did you do, Agony?
He scuttled backwards towards the door. It was pouring out the gash now, turning the right side of the bed into some perverted slip and slide, dumping Jake's thrashing body directly onto the ground. The blood was making his hands slick and useless, and he kept slipping and falling into trash as he dragged himself towards the door.
What did you do?
Nothing,
she whispered, seeing his swaying form grasping the handle of her closed door. But he couldn't stop. Anything to keep the darkness at bay.
What did you do, Agony Blue?
But this time she didn't answer, knowing that she wouldn't be believed. Agony waited until he had collapsed out in the hall to stand up and attempt to close the window. She was little, and it was cold, and it made sense that she would try to close it. But what she didn't understand, even after she tried time and time again,
is that the window only opens outwards and not inwards, and that by forcing it, it had been broken beyond repair. Like a seed planted in stone, a pliable strength grows within someone when faced with insurmountable odds again and again. At first, it may seem improbable for the seed to grow, faced with hard-packed laden layers of concrete and brick. The air and life above seem impossible to reach. So instead of pushing, the seed winds through, circumventing the odds instead of fighting. Cretia Apartments, as a whole, was in an enormously terrible state of disrepair. The squat, 8-story building was in laughably terrible condition. The windows on the first 2 entire floors were blown out, with pieces of glass strewn on the cracked sidewalk, glistening like Cinderella's shoe. The front door was completely gone, and enormous piles of trash, stacked like snowdrifts, flanked each side of the gaping entrance. The inside didn't fare much better. The hallways were dilapidated, especially on the 8th floor, as the years of rampant cigarette smoke abuse had drifted upwards, poisoning the walls and ceilings and announcing its pungent presence like some sort of vile spider. The wallpaper was peeling, in some areas completely torn away, and the carpet was stained and matted from coagulated fluids. The apartment doors themselves didn't have locks, or if they did, the locks had been broken for years now. The residents instead used the building's unseemly reputation to keep even more unseemly characters at bay, which worked, except for the occasional unwanted intruder. Little Agony Blue, her footsteps soundless and deliberate, delicately picked a path through the debris and maelstrom that littered the hallway outside of her apartment. Her little fingers traced a path on the rotting wallpaper as she walked down the hall. An enormous sheath of wallpaper had fallen over her neighbor's apartment door, which she carefully moved aside, stepping over the unconscious bodies of her neighbors as she did so. They were junkies, just like her mom, and just like every other person in this building. Their addiction, born from the toxic wellspring of poverty, ignorance, and stupidity, had caused them to fight last night, shaking Agony's bedroom walls until the wee hours of the morning when she heard them stumble outside, vomit, and then pass out. They did this every night, so all she had to do was wait until they passed out and then walk over. Agony cracked open the door, feeling a rush of putrid fumes. In the darkness, she found what she was looking for.
Little Jimmy.
Nothing. She pushed open the door a little further.
Jimmy, it's Agony.
She heard sniffling. It was a little boy, barely discernible under the piles of trash and dirt that carpeted this apartment. The state of disrepair was absolutely deplorable and inhumane to raise a child in.
Come on, Jimmy.
He was a little younger than her, the neighbor's boy, with big, round eyes and a thick bush of blonde hair. He sniffled again, rubbing his eyes with one dirt-smeared hand, and reached out for Agony Blue. His hand was weightless in hers. He was so malnourished that his bones felt like air. His bones were so weak, his skin was so thin, it seemed as if you shined a bright light on him, it would pass right through, like he wasn't even there.
"Where are we going?"
he croaked, his throat weak from crying. But Agony didn't answer. Instead, winding her way through the piles of trash that were stacked almost to the ceiling in their kitchen. Their apartment was set up the same as hers, as she circumvented it easily, even though she had never stepped foot in here before. Her step was brisk, and she made it almost all the way to the front door before he pulled back, weakly.
"I said, where are we going, Agony?"
His big round eyes were brimming with tears. He looked so forlorn, standing there next to the unconscious bodies of his parents. Agony stopped, and then bent down, brushing a lock of hair from his face. To the little seedling, the stony acropolis above would represent something larger than just a slab of concrete. to the little seedling who has already spent its entire, albeit short, existence fighting for the slimmest chance of survival, that rocky abyss would represent death, the final stand between it and life above. That giant slab of concrete, or gravel heap, or insurmountable odds, the little seedling would find itself longing for the water and nurturing sunlight above, tormented by the understanding that there was something better, but yet trapped by the circumstances. So what does this little seedling do? It finds another way around.
I'm coming to take you away, Jimmy.
Her blue eyes never left him.
Are you okay with that?
His eyes, still big and still brimming with tears, stared trustingly into hers as he nodded twice. A smile stretched across her face, splitting it in two.
Okay,
she said quietly, as the door shut suddenly behind her.